There you are, Fanny.
Sir.
I think you spend more time in these gardens than the peacocks do.
I used to hide here when I was a child.
You were lonely, I think.
I did not mean...
Oh, no, 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 of course not. Come. Walk with me. At dinner last night, when I was talking of my problems in Antigua...
Forgive me for asking so many questions.
Oh, you are the only person, apart from Edmund, to ask me anything at all of my affairs. All is changing, Fanny. I fear that in but a handful of years, 10, 20 perhaps, we shall recognize neither ourselves nor the lives we lead.
Then we are in good company.
And tell me, how is that?
We are like the trees you planted in the wood. Every year they seem transformed, but essentially they, like we, remain the same. Rooted, always themselves, despite appearing altered. As you shall also remain, sir. Always your true self, and much loved because of it, despite what the future may bring.
At this same time, Maria is in a good deal of agitation. She desires Henry Crawford to lose no time in declaring himself. She has been expecting to see him the whole morning. 24 hours have never passed before, since August began, without bringing them together in some way or other.
And what of your plans, Mr. Crawford?
I travel from Bath to Norfolk, and then London, and on to York. I may get as far as Banbury today.
Ah.
You are leaving?
Indeed, yes. I must attend to business upon my estate.
Well, a man must look to his responsibilities with his own eyes.
Mr. Crawford turns to Maria, who is struggling to take this news with some degree of calmness. He is choosing to go, voluntarily intending to stay away. This man who has pressed her hand to his heart. Her spirit supports her, but the agony of her mind is severe. Within the hour, he is gone.
Come inside, Maria. Fanny, I did not see you. Come inside. You are cold.
Another day or two, and Mr. Yates has also departed.
Ah, Maria, there you are.
You wish to speak with me, Father?
Maria, I have called you here to make absolutely certain you are at ease with your coming marriage to Mr. Rushworth. I have to tell you, although I can see that Rushworth is a decent man and eligible in all respects, he was not the man I expected to find as husband to my eldest daughter. I'm a little surprised, my dear. And, must be reassured that you are entirely happy with the arrangement. Maria.
I am grateful, Father, but I must assure you I have not the smallest desire of breaking my engagement. I have the highest esteem for Mr. Rushworth's character and disposition, and no doubt of my happiness with him.
And so it is that Maria Bertram pledges herself anew to Southerton, safe from the possibility of giving Henry Crawford the triumph of governing her actions and destroying her prospects. She commits herself to a marriage which will bring both respectability and influence. Had Mr. Crawford returned, or written, perhaps her mind would not have cooled enough to seek all the comfort that pride and self-revenge can give. If Henry Crawford had destroyed her happiness, he should not also destroy her credit, her appearance, and her prosperity too. Maria asks Julia to accompany her on the honeymoon, and with both sisters gone, Fanny finds herself the only young woman remaining at Mansfield Park.
Miss Price! Miss Price, do come into the parsonage and shelter. You will catch your death!
And so it is that not a week later, Fanny is sitting, dried out and well cared for, in Mary Crawford's drawing room.
Miss Price, what were you thinking of? Out there in a positive storm.
You are too kind, Miss Crawford.
You must have some tea to warm you, and a piece of cake to lift your spirits.
Thank you. Oh, what a beautiful harp.
Would you like me to play for you?
Yes, indeed, Miss Crawford, I should like that very much.
Fanny thinks of Edmund, sitting in the very same room, in the very same place. Fanny is drawn to Miss Crawford. She is the object of Edmund's fascination. And Fanny, longing to feel close again to Edmund, finds herself unable to let a day pass without visiting the parsonage.
If anyone had told me a year ago that this would be my home, I certainly should not have believed them. I have now been here nearly 5 months, and moreover, the quietest 5 months I ever passed.
Too quiet for your taste, perhaps.
I should have thought so, but take it all and all, I never spent a happier summer.
Fanny's heart beats quick. She knows very well that it is Edmund's presence that has held Miss Crawford here.
I am conscious of being far better reconciled to a country residence than I ever expected to be. Ah, Mr. Bertram approaches. I'm so glad your eldest cousin has gone, so that Mr. Edmund Bertram may be Mr. Bertram again. There is something in the sound of Mr. Edmund Bertram that is so younger brother-like.
How differently we feel. I find the title of Mr. so cold, it just stands for a gentleman. I should much rather use Edmund's name when addressing him.
Good day to you, Miss Crawford. Fanny?
Mr. Bertram. Still bound upon the path of poverty and idealism?
Still holding true to the guidance of my heart, Miss Crawford.
And does this invaluable heart advise you on such mundane matters as to whether the rich are held at a greater distance from God's acceptance than the poor?
Do you have a personal interest in such matters, Miss Crawford?
I certainly hope to be rich. Do not you? Do not we all?
My intentions are only not to be poor.
Be honest and poor by all means, but I have much greater respect for those that are honest and rich.
We must go. Good day, Miss Crawford.
Mr. Bertram. Miss Price. My dear brother, you are arrived home some days early from your business.
Indeed, I saw no reason to remain longer when I might return to my dear sister's side. Was that Miss Price I saw you walking with just now?
It was, and her cousin, Mr. Bertram.
And how is she?
Well.
I am concerned, now that I'm arrived, however, as to how I shall amuse myself on these long country days.
Do you not hunt? Perhaps you may shoot.
But that would only exercise my body. And I must take care of my mind. I think I rather desire to see more of Fanny Price.
No, Henry. You must be satisfied with her two cousins.
Impossible. I cannot be at ease without the youngest of the brood. No, I have thought about it long and hard, and my mind is made up. I need something. Something to amuse me. Something on which to focus my energies. It is my intention to make Fanny Price fall in love with me.
Henry Crawford has quite made up his mind to make Fanny Price fall in love with him. For her part, Fanny has not the slightest suspicion of his intentions. Her thoughts are elsewhere, with her cousin Edmund and her brother William at sea.
I tell you, Mary, I cannot be satisfied without Fanny Price, without making a small hole in her heart. Have you not seen the wonderful improvement that has taken place in her looks in the last 6 weeks?
She is just what she was in October, Henry. The truth is that she is now the only girl at Mansfield for you to notice, and you know what you were like. You must have somebody.
You are mistaken. I never was so long in company with a girl in my life, trying to entertain her and succeeding so ill. She's thinking, I will not like you. I am determined not to like you. But I say she shall.
Ah, there you are, Fanny. Did you not hear me calling you?
No, Aunt.
When I call the chickens, they are more attentive than you are, Fanny.
Forgive me.
You appear to have a letter.
For me?
There is only one Fanny Price residing at Mansfield Park, I believe.
Thank you, Aunt.
Distressing news?
No, indeed. Oh.
And things would grow most to subdue an affair may justly be reckoned an ass may justly be reckoned.
Mr. Crawford, do forgive me.
Why, Miss Price, you nearly knocked me down.
Are you hurt?
I have broken nothing myself, but I cannot speak so confidently for this rose bush.
That stem has always been a little out of kilter.
I know how it feels.
I have wonderful news, Mr. Crawford.
Praise unto the gods, Miss Price, for whatever brings a smile upon your face surely brings a smile to mine also.
My brother William is coming to visit us. My brother, who I have not seen these 8 long years.
I am heartily glad for you. To be without a much-loved brother for so long a time is a painful wound to bear.
Yes, indeed. I have missed him greatly.
But now he is coming home. Hurrah!
Yes.
Hurrah!
Edmund, that must be Mr. William now.
Quite possibly, Aunt.
Quite possibly? Whoever else might be expected
to be... What I mean, Aunt, is that Fanny has not seen her brother for a very long time, and it might indeed be kind to let her meet William alone.
I'm sure I've never heard of such a thing in all my life. But if my company is not desired, then I shall return to my poor basket, I'm sure.
William? William, is it really you?
Fan? Look at you.
Look at you. You're big.
So are you. Oh, Fanny. Look what's happened to us. We've grown up.
I've thought of you every day.
You've been my most loyal friend. All those letters. It's all right, Fan. Look at us. We're all right. And look, we're together again.
Yes, isn't it wonderful?
Later that evening, Henry Crawford watches brother and sister together. And as he does so, he is no longer in doubt of the capabilities of Fanny's heart. She has feeling, genuine feeling. It would be something to be loved by such a girl.
We were above a mile from the shore, sir, and bombarded soundly on 2 sides.
Oh, my dear William. I'm quite afraid just listening. Now, Pug, it's just a story.
No, shush. Now, go on, William. Tell us more.
I was upon the bridge with the captain. He never stirred from his place.
Well, a good leader must inspire by example.
Oh, yes, Sir Thomas. He was a fine gentleman. And as we stood there, he said, "Put your coats on, men, for I fear it will rain, and I do not wish to see you catch cold."
Cold is indeed a very inconvenient thing at any time.
And as we struggled into our jackets, a great hail of cannon was leased from the French. And the next thing I knew, we were all in the water. And when we staggered onto the shore, I had still one arm into my jacket and one arm out.
Wonderful. And, what of your captain?
He was killed, sir.
A brave man.
Henry Crawford longs to have been at sea, to have seen and done and suffered so much. The glory of heroism, of usefulness, of endurance, makes his habits of selfish indulgence appear in shameful contrast. He wishes himself to be a William Price, instead of what he is.
I do not like, William, that you should leave us without having the opportunity to see your sister dance.
I have heard, sir, about the dances at Northampton.
No, they are, I believe, well attended. But I think perhaps a dance at home would be more appropriate.
My dear Sir Thomas, if Julia were at home, or dearest Mrs. Rushworth, to afford a reason for such an occasion, then naturally...
My daughters have their own pleasures at Brighton, and I hope are very happy. But the dance which I think of giving at Mansfield will be for William and Fanny.
What a wonderful idea, Father.
We shall arrange it for shortly before William is due to return to Portsmouth.
Thank you, sir.
Uncle, I've never been to a ball.
Well, we shall make it a wonderful evening, then.
What a very good idea.
Edmund is at this time particularly full of cares. His mind is deeply occupied in the consideration of two important events now at hand, which are to fix his fate in life, ordination and matrimony.
Come, Pug. We'll take a walk in the shrubbery and you can look at the snowdrops.
Soon he is to go to Peterborough, where he will receive ordination. And as to Miss Crawford, everything depends for Edmund on just one question.
Does she love me, Pug? What do you think? There is so much on which we do not agree. She prefers London to the country. She detests privacy. We are not much like one another. Do I have any cause to hope that she might put these differences aside and one day be my wife?
Miss Crawford, please excuse me, but I could not possibly...
You can see what a collection of necklaces I have, Miss Price, and more by half than I ever think to use.
I am very grateful.
You have a beautiful cross which your brother bought you from Malta, did he not?
Yes, indeed.
And you wear it upon the most charming satin ribbon.
It was William's intention to get me a chain, but, well, it was too expensive.
But now you have a ball to prepare for, so do oblige me and see if there's a little necklace here of mine which would do for the occasion.
You are very kind.
Fanny looks and looks, longing to know which is the least valuable.
This is simple and lovely.
Yes, indeed. I like it very much. When I wear this necklace, I shall always think of you and how very kind you are.
You must think of someone else, too, when you wear it. You must think of Henry, for he gave it to me.
Oh, no, Miss Crawford, then I could not possibly...
My dear child, say no more about it. Such a trifle is not worth half so many words.
Edmund!
I beg your pardon for being here. But I have something for you. A little chain for William's cross.
Oh.
You ought to have had it a week ago.
It's beautiful. But...
What is it, Fanny?
Miss Crawford has this very day also given me a chain. I shall return it.
No. She will be most upset and think it unwanted. No, what kindness she has shown. You must not hurt her feelings. I could not bear to see that happen between the two dearest people I have on this earth. Wear hers and keep mine.
Fanny has heard right. She is one of the two dearest people in Edmund's life. She has never heard him speak so openly before. But she knows he will marry Mary Crawford. Fanny holds his chain to her heart as if it is the only gift she has ever received. The entire family are gathered in the drawing room when Fanny comes down for the ball.
Do you see what has happened to our little niece, my dear?
She looks very well. I sent Chapman to dress her.
She looks more than well. She is a beautiful woman.
She has reason to look well with all her advantages. Only think, Sir Thomas, what we have given her. What would she have been if we had not taken her in hand?
Fanny sees that she is approved, and her consciousness of looking well makes her look still better.
Miss Price, I do hope you will do me the honour of reserving the first two dances in my name.
I should be delighted, Mr. Crawford.
And I hope you will both honour us by leading the ball.
Sir, I could not possibly...
Oh, it must be so, my dear. Do you not see? All these people have come along with but one purpose in mind. To meet you.
Fanny is conducted to the top of the room by Henry Crawford, and they are joined by the rest of the dancers. She can hardly believe it. To be placed above so many elegant young women.
Come, Fanny. Let us engage upon our duty with the seriousness with which it deserves.
They are all looking at us, Mr. Crawford.
Then we must do our best to entertain them in that case. We have the music. Let us dance. What a lovely chain you are wearing, Miss Price. But alas, it is not mine.
Yours?
My sister's, that is.
She very kindly gave me a chain, but it did not fit my cross.
Poor chain. Its heart is broken, I think, to have failed you.
The evening affords Edmund little pleasure, however, and as the hour draws late, Fanny finds him alone and downhearted.
Edmund, what is wrong?
I should not spoil your night.
Tell me, please.
I went to see Miss Crawford earlier, to engage her for the first two dances. She has never danced with a clergyman, she said. She never will. I wish there had been no ball ever. And tomorrow I leave for Peterborough.
I'm very sorry you are sad.
I know Miss Crawford's disposition to be as sweet and faultless as your own, but the influence of her former companions gives her conversation a tinge of something wrong. She does not think evil, but she speaks it. I know it's only playfulness, but it grieves me to the soul.
It is the effect of education. It is a way of being she has come to think amusing.
Her uncle and aunt, her upbringing, what she expects of life, they have injured her with their attitudes and manners.
He takes her hand and presses it to his cheek.
Dearest Fanny, she will never marry me. I have nothing to offer her.
You are a good man, Edmund. Truly, Miss Crawford is quite mistaken if she cannot see that your heart is worth 1,000 gallant sea captains and prosperous lawyers.
It is not long before the ball is ended, and by dawn, Henry Crawford and William are upon their way to Northampton. It is a heavy, melancholy day. Soon after the second breakfast, Edmund bids them goodbye for a week and mounts his horse for Peterborough. Nothing remains of the previous night but remembrances.
Oh, Fanny, you must do something to keep me awake. Fetch the cards. I feel so very stupid.
Yes, Aunt.
And that makes 31. 4 in hand and 8 in the crib. You are to deal, ma'am.
Fanny thinks of the difference 24 hours can make in this room. Last night it had been all hopes and smiles, noise and brilliancy. Now it is languor and solitude.
We miss our two young men.
Oh, indeed.
There is no reason to suppose that William may not visit us often in the future. As to Edmund, we must learn to do without him. Once he is ordained, we shall see little of him, I expect.
Fanny listens, the touch of Edmund's cheek upon her hand still lingering. The loss of him, a terrible, unspoken blow. Edmund Bertram has gone to Peterborough to be ordained, and Fanny misses him deeply. But Mary Crawford is more devastated than even she had thought possible.
I must be getting back to the parsonage, Miss Price, but I had it in mind to ask you. Are you not surprised at your cousin Edmund staying away so long?
I do not know, Miss Crawford. Perhaps I had not expected it.
I cannot help being rather concerned at not seeing him again before I leave Mansfield for London. I should like to have seen him again, I confess. But you must give my compliments to him.
There was a letter.
A letter? Does he give an account of what delays him?
It was to my uncle. I believe it was very short.
There are three sisters in the house where he resides, I believe.
The Miss Owens.
And are they musical? I'm sure they are. And perhaps beautiful. There is beauty in every family, it is to be expected.
I have never met them.
Suppose you were to have one of the Miss Owens settle hereabouts. How should you like it?
I cannot say.
I dare say they are trying for it. It is everybody's duty to do as well for themselves as they can. The father is a clergyman, and the brother is a clergyman. They are all clergymen together. You don't speak, Miss Price.
I do not know what to say.
But honestly, do you not think I am correct in my suspicion?
No, I do not. I am quite sure that Edmund has simply been delayed.
Mary Crawford walks home in better spirits. to find her brother unexpectedly in the drawing room.
Henry.
You are just returned from Mansfield Park, I think.
Indeed. I have been visiting Miss Price.
Inquiring as to what delays her cousin?
Enjoying a little conversation, certainly. She is delightful company.
What I am about to say, it will astonish you.
I am not easily astonished, Henry.
My mind is entirely made up. I am determined to marry Fanny Price.
Marry?
You know with what idle designs I began, but this is the end of them. I have made no inconsiderable progress in her affections, and my own feelings are entirely fixed.
But what a match for her. Oh, I approve your choice, with all my soul. You will have a sweet wife. What an extraordinary match for her.
Mary, I cannot be certain. I do not think I shall ask in vain.
I do not think she would marry you without love. If there is a girl in the world capable of being uninfluenced by ambition, I know it is her. But ask her to love you, and she will never have the heart to refuse.
I will make her happy, Mary. Happier than she has ever been in her life.
But what will Mrs. Rushworth and Julia say? You have made them both very much in love with you, and now it is their poor cousin you have chosen to marry.
I care neither what they say nor what they feel. They will now see the sort of woman that can attach me, and I wish the discovery may do them good. And they will see their cousin treated as she ought to be, and I wish that they may be heartily ashamed of their own neglect and unkindness. Her condition remains as it always has been, dependent, helpless, friendless, and forgotten.
Her cousin Edmund never forgets her.
True. But what can he do for her happiness and dignity in the world to what I shall do?
The next morning, Henry Crawford presents himself in the drawing room of Mansfield Park.
Miss Price.
Mr. Crawford, you are returned.
I am, and I bring good news. Your brother William is a lieutenant. Here are the letters which announce it.
Fanny cannot speak, but he does not want her to speak. To see the expression in her eyes, the change in her complexion is enough.
My own happiness is, I think, as great as yours. Second Lieutenant William Price of Her Majesty's Sloop Thrush.
Has this been all you're doing, then? Very, very kind. Mr. Crawford, we are infinitely obliged to you.
He takes her hand and leads her back to her seat.
Miss Price, there is so much I have to tell you. Indeed, I am happy for your brother, for I know you love him with all the deep affection of your fine heart. But my heart, too, is full. Full to overflowing with sensations I have never felt, never thought I would feel in my whole life.
Mr. Crawford, I do not understand
you. I barely understand myself, Miss Price, and I am delighted to be caught off guard by such a truly wonderful revelation.
Of course, I am very grateful for your helping William.
It was you I wanted to please.
Me.
Everything I have done for William is on account of my deep attachment for you.
Mr. Crawford, please.
I cannot help myself. I must tell you how I feel.
I must leave you.
If you could but consider the possibility of loving me in the future. I can be patient. I know you would never marry without love.
Marry?
But I will become a man who deserves your love if you will but give me the time to do it.
Mr. Crawford, I cannot know how this has happened. I am overwhelmed with everything you have given William, but...
I want you to be my wife. There. I am as surprised as you are, for I have never imagined being married to any woman, but you have changed me, Miss Price. I want as much to be your husband, your champion, your protector, as I have ever desired anything in the whole of my life, and I promise you with all my heart that if you but put your faith in me and join your destiny to mine, I shall not fail you.
No, no, you cannot think of me like this. You must not. Please, I beg you, Mr. Crawford, this must stop.
The rest of the day, Fanny spends alone in her room, deeply unsettled by Henry Crawford's proposal. When she goes down to dinner, she is startled to discover, however, that Henry has been invited to join them.
Well, I hear we have much to thank you for, Mr. Crawford.
It was nothing, Sir Thomas.
William, a lieutenant. And what is the name of his ship again, Fanny?
The Thrush.
Well, you've done us a great service, my dear Crawford. Is that not so, Fanny?
Yes, indeed.
I beg you, sir, it was a pleasure, as it should always be, to be of assistance to any person whom Miss Price holds dear.
Is it not extraordinary how much young people cost their friends? What with bringing them up and putting them out in the world?
I know William to be very grateful, Aunt Norris.
I was happy to be able to give William something not inconsiderable when he departed, because such a gesture is not always possible for a widow such as myself with limited means.
I am glad you gave him something not inconsiderable, sister, for I gave him £10.
Upon my word, he must have gone off with his pockets well lined.
On Henry Crawford's arrival, he had presented Fanny with a note from Mary.
My dear Fanny, for so I may now call you, I cannot let my brother go without sending you a few lines of general congratulation. Go on, my dear Fanny, and without fear. There can be no difficulties worth naming. I chose to suppose that the assurance of my consent will be something, so you may smile upon him with your sweetest smiles this afternoon, and send him back to me even happier than he goes. Yours affectionately, Mary.
I know my sister hopes for a reply to her note, Miss Price.
Yes, I will write directly. I am very much obliged to you, my dear Miss Crawford, for your kind congratulations. But I hope you will excuse me when I ask you to take no further notice of your brother's offer of marriage. It would be a great favour if you would never mention the subject again. With thanks for the honour of your note, I remain, dear Miss Crawford, Fanny Price. The next morning, when Fanny awakes, she is astonished to see Henry Crawford coming yet again to the house, and at an hour as early as the previous day. Nearly half an hour passes before her uncle appears in her doorway.
Ah, Fanny. Have you no fire today?
I am not cold, sir.
But, you have a fire in general.
No, sir.
I know that your Aunt Norris has always been a great believer in young people being brought up without indulgences, but there should be moderation in everything. The principle in itself is good, but in your case I believe it to have been carried too far. I think too well of you, Fanny, to suppose you will ever harbour resentment on that account. Your elders saw themselves as preparing you for that mediocrity of condition which seemed to be your lot. Now, you may not be aware that I had a visitor this morning. Mr. Crawford wishes for you to be his wife. I am truly happy for you, Fanny. It's a good match. He's ambitious and harbours for you, I think, a genuine affection. I know that you would wish to hear my approval from my own lips. He's waiting downstairs, Fanny. He's in my room, hoping to see you there.
I cannot go down to him. I told him everything yesterday. I told him without disguise that it was very disagreeable to me and quite out of my power to return his good opinion.
Out of your power to return his good opinion? What is this? I know he spoke to you yesterday, and, as I understand it, he received as much encouragement to proceed as any a well-judging young woman could permit herself to give.
You are mistaken, sir. Could Mr. Crawford say such a thing? I gave him no encouragement yesterday.
Am I to understand that you mean to refuse, Mr. Crawford?
Yes, sir.
Refuse him?
Yes.
For what reason?
I cannot like him, sir, well enough to marry him.
This is beyond my comprehension. Here is a young man with everything to recommend him, a situation in life, a fortune, and agreeable in every way. You have known him for some time, and his sister is your intimate friend. He has served your brother William with great generosity of heart.
It is true.
His feelings cannot have taken you by surprise. I have never observed Mr. Crawford being unpleasant to you.
Indeed not.
Then I must be inclined to think that you do not know your own feelings on the subject.
Yes, sir, I do.
Have you any reason to think ill of Mr. Crawford's temper?
Fanny's heart sinks. Her ill opinion of Henry Crawford is founded on observations which, for her cousin's sake, she dare not mention to her uncle. She cannot speak of Mr. Crawford's misconduct towards Maria and Julia.
Well, I thought you free from wilfulness of temper, self-conceit, and every tendency to that independence of spirit which prevails so much in modern days, even in young women, and which, in a young woman, is offensive and disgusting beyond all common offence.
Uncle,
you
please.
Have shown me that you are willful and perverse. Think how your brothers and sisters might benefit from such a marriage. But no, no, no. You think only of yourself.
I beg you, please, sir. Try to understand.
I understand very well, Fanny. In a wild fit of folly, you are throwing away an opportunity of being settled in life, eligibly, honourably, and nobly, as will probably never happen to you again. Here is a man of sense, character, manner, and fortune exceedingly attached to you. And let me tell you, Fanny, that you may live 18 years longer in the world without being addressed by a man of half Mr. Crawford's estate or a tenth of his merits.
I cannot help it. Uncle, if it were possible for me to do otherwise, I am so perfectly convinced that I could never make him happy and that I should be miserable myself.
I see. All is said, then. I understand you quite well.
Edmund. Edmund, please come home. What am I to do?
Poor Fanny is more alone than she has ever been. The past, the present, the future all seem terrible to her. She has no one to take her part. No one to speak for her. Edmund is far away, and his mind is occupied with Mary Crawford, the woman he longs to marry. Henry Crawford has proposed to Fanny Price, but Fanny has not forgotten Edmund, and though she knows the impossibility of any future with him, she longs for him to come home to Mansfield Park.
How could Fanny Price refuse a gentleman such as Mr. Crawford?
Indeed, sister,
to have me asked is extraordinary enough. And for poor Julia to be so snubbed, so insulted. And then for Fanny Price to refuse.
Fanny. There you are. Now, I know I promised my dear husband not to speak to you on this matter, but I had a most agreeable surprise this morning, and I must say, we certainly must be a handsome family to excite a young man of Mr. Crawford's means and position.
Aunt, you cannot wish me to have done differently. You cannot wish me to marry. If you would miss me, I'm quite sure.
Oh, I could do very well without you if you were married to a man of such good estate as Mr. Crawford. And you must be aware, Fanny, that it is every young woman's duty to accept such an exceptional offer as this.
Here we have almost the only piece of advice Fanny has ever received from her aunt. It silences her. Edmund has much to hear on his return from his ordination, not least of which is Henry Crawford's proposal of marriage to Fanny.
Things done well.
That evening finds the entire family, along with Mr. Crawford, gathered together in the drawing room.
You are to be feared. Have you precedent of this commission? I believe not any. We must not rend our subjects from our laws.
My dear Fanny, you must be exhausted.
No, Aunt. I enjoy to read.
You will strain your eyes.
Perhaps I might read to you, Lady Bertram.
Oh, Mr. Crawford. How nice of you to think of offering.
Edmund watches for Fanny's response as Henry Crawford begins to read.
Why we take from every tree lop bark and part of the timber, and though we leave it with a root, thus hacked the air will drink the sap.
Fanny tries not to raise her head from her work, determined to show no interest whatsoever in Henry Crawford's reading.
If ever any malice in your heart were hid against me, now forgive me frankly.
But his reading is too good.
I do not know.
And her pleasure in good reading is extreme.
More than my all is nothing. Nor my prayers are not words duly hallowed, nor my wishes more worth than empty vanities. Yet prayers and wishes are all I can return.
At last, the eyes which Fanny has used to studiously avoid him throughout the day are fixed on Henry till he senses them and returns her gaze.
Why, Mr. Crawford, that play must be a favourite with you, for you read it so very well.
It will be a favourite of mine, I believe, from this hour.
You have a great turn for acting, Mr. Crawford, and I tell you what, I think you will have a theatre some time or other at your house in Norfolk.
No, that will never be. Your ladyship is quite mistaken.
He looks at Fanny, smiling.
I think my acting days are long behind me.
Later, as Lady Bertram dozes on the sofa, Fanny and Henry Crawford find themselves virtually alone.
You see, Miss Price, I am quite changed. I am happier than I was because I now understand more clearly your opinion of me.
Mr. Crawford.
Let me explain. You think me unsteady, easily swayed by the whim of the moment, easily tempted. I shall not convince you by telling you of the alteration in me. My conduct over time must speak for me. It will prove that as far as you can be deserved by anybody, I do deserve you. You are my superior in all respects, this I know, but I am still not frightened. It is not by a quality of merit that you can be won. That's out of the question. It is he who loves you most devotedly shall have the best return, and by that right I do and will deserve you.
How long it is since we have ridden together, Fanny?
You have much that occupies you now, Edmund.
All is changed since we were children.
Not all.
Will you not tell me, Fanny, what is on your mind?
I am afraid.
Afraid? Of what?
That we think too differently for me to find any relief in talking of what I feel.
I consider Crawford's proposal most desirable, if you could return his affection.
But I thought you were against me. This is such a comfort.
But how could you possibly suppose me against you? How could you imagine me an advocate for a marriage without love?
My uncle thought me wrong. Terribly wrong, and I know he has been talking to you. Myself and Mr. Crawford, we are so totally unalike.
But your being unalike, Fanny, does not in the smallest degree count against the probability of your happiness together. But some differences are useful when it comes to matrimonial happiness. One does not wish to have a companion who is in all ways exactly like oneself.
I cannot approve his character. I have not thought well of him from the time of the play. He behaved so very improperly.
Let us not any of us be judged by that time. Maria was wrong, Crawford was wrong. We were all wrong together, and none so wrong as myself.
Perhaps I saw more than you did.
And Miss Crawford, she is very angry with you. But it is only the disappointment of a sister, I think.
I knew she must be angry.
But her heart is made for love and kindness. Your refusal is more than she can understand.
I should have thought that every woman must have felt the possibility of a man's not being approved. Let him have all the perfections in the world, yet it ought not to be set down as certain that a man must be acceptable to every woman he may happen to like himself.
If you do not love him, then nothing can justify your accepting him. But the matter does not end there. Crawford's affection for you is deep. He plans to persevere in the hope of winning your love in the future. Let him succeed at last. You have proved yourself upright and disinterested, and now prove yourself grateful and tender-hearted. And then you will be the perfect model of a woman, which I always believed you to be.
Never, never, never. He will never succeed with me.
Fanny! Fan! Come back! I'm sorry!
Edmund speaks with his father and recommends that no more efforts be made to influence or persuade.
Come in.
Fanny Price, here you are in your own dear room.
Miss Crawford.
I was once only in this room before, do you remember? When I came here to rehearse. And then your cousin Edmund arrived. When two sympathetic hearts meet in the marriage state, matrimony may be called a happy life. I suppose no time can ever wear out the impression I have of his looks and his voice as he said those words. If I had the power of reliving any one week in my life, Miss Price, it should be that week, the acting week.
and saying so, with a degree of tenderness which Fanny has never seen in her before, Mary Crawford weeps.
Good gentle Fanny. When I think of this being the last time of seeing you for, I do not know how long, I feel it quite impossible to do anything but love you.
Miss Crawford, I am quite sure all will be well for you in London. You have so many acquaintances.
I should see no one half so amiable where I am going. Who is to say we shall not be sisters one day? I know we shall. I feel we are born to be connected.
But truly, you are only going from one set of friends to another.
I think only of the friends I am leaving. You have all so much more heart among you than one finds in the world at large. Is it any wonder my brother so much desires to be part of your family? To find a place in your heart?
Miss Crawford.
You must have seen that he was trying to please you by every attention in his power. Was he not devoted to you at the ball? And then before the ball, the necklace.
Do you mean that your brother knew of the necklace beforehand?
Knew of it? It was his own doing entirely.
Had I any idea of it, nothing would have induced me to accept the necklace. As to your brother's behaviour, I had been sensible to it for some little time. Perhaps 2 or 3 weeks, but I put it down as simply being his way. I had not, Miss Crawford, been an inattentive observer of what was passing between him and some parts of this family in the summer and autumn. I was quiet, but I was not blind. I could not but see that Mr. Crawford allowed himself gallantries which meant nothing.
I do not defend him. I leave him entirely to your mercy. But if any man ever loved a woman for ever, I think Henry will do so much for you. I shall see your cousin in town, I hope. He talks of being there tolerably soon. And the Rushworths and Julia, I am sure of seeing again and again. I must take my leave. But I long for a happy reunion. I do long for it. At a time when all these troubles are resolved. Goodbye, Miss Price. Dear Fanny, write to me.
In the evening, there is another parting. Henry Crawford sits with the family some time, but is quite unlike his usual self. And Fanny grieves for him in his distress, though hoping she might never see him again, till at least he is the husband of some other woman. But with Mr. Crawford gone, it is Sir Thomas's object that he should be missed.
Ah, Fanny. Come in. Come in. We have had some very pleasing news. Your brother William has obtained 10 days' leave of absence.
That is good news, sir.
Indeed, and I have naturally suggested that he come directly to join us here at Mansfield Park.
Thank you, Uncle.
And then I thought that perhaps you should like to accompany him back to Portsmouth.
Portsmouth?
You might both spend a little time with your mother.
Sir, I should dearly love to see my mother again.
Well then, it is settled.
Do you think that she will enjoy such a reunion? Seeing her home again might prove an intolerable shock to the girl.
That is precisely what I envisage. I wish her to be shocked, to be lonely, and to look poverty in the face. What better way to encourage a girl to count her blessings?
Oh, but Sir Thomas, Fanny has always been such a good girl. Always so grateful for what we've given her.
And she is about to make the mistake of her life. A brief time to take stock of her situation may be just what she needs to encourage her to see the value in Mr. Henry Crawford.
It is indeed a handsome match. Well, if you're quite sure...
I am.
Fanny? Fan? Oh. Whatever are you doing out here?
Those are the great grey steps I walked up when I first arrived. Do you remember? The drawing-room windows with the view of the great oaks, and at the side, the long grass where the rabbits hide after they've had their dinner in the kitchen garden. I love this house.
You are not leaving forever, just for a little while?
Perhaps all will be changed in that time.
Go see your mother. When you have done, come back here to your home, Mansfield Park.
I do not know how I shall manage without you.
I shall write, Aunt.
God bless you, Fanny.
Uncle. Mind that you prove useful to your mother, given that you are so easily distracted from your work.
Aunt.
Fanny, I shall miss you terribly.
I do not want to go.
All will be well. Write to us.
I will.
Goodbye, my dear. Do give my sister our kindest love.
And before long, Mansfield Park is quite out of sight. And ahead of Fanny Price lies once again the open road. Sir Thomas Bertram has sent Fanny to stay with her mother in Portsmouth. He has not done this out of any true love for the bond between mother and child, but rather in the hope that it will loosen Fanny's resistance to Henry Crawford's proposal of marriage.
Mother! Mother, they're here! They're here!
Sir Thomas is quite certain that a spell away from the comforts of Mansfield Park will serve to remind Fanny that wealth and position may indeed have much to recommend them.
Oh, where's Rebecca? Rebecca!
Coming up in a fine carriage.
Oh, Susan, Rebecca!
And William's with her. They're getting out.
Oh, how do I look?
How do you mean?
Well, she hasn't seen me, has she? Your sister Fanny hasn't seen me these 8 long years. Rebecca!
You calling me, missus? Only the lard has gone and fallen on the floor and I'm scraping it off out with a ladle.
Oh, never mind that. Rebecca, Fanny's here.
Mother.
Oh.
We made good time. Oh. The town was busy as we came in. Here's Fanny. Oh,
my dear. Let me hold you.
Mother.
Your ship's gone out of harbour, William. And we've got to join it just as soon as you're home.
Oh, let me look at you.
Gone off to Spithead, it has. And Mr. Campbell, come to fetch you.
I believe I would have known you.
Look, it's spilled lard all over the kitchen floor,
oh,
Mother.
Susan, come and greet your sister. Oh, Susan, how tall you are.
14, I am.
I need my shirts, Mother, and I got to get ready.
Now, Sam is joining his brother on the
thrush. Oh, I ain't got no shirts, Susan.
I'm not sewing your shirt.
Susan!
Now, Rebecca! Poor dears, how tired you must be.
It's a girl's duty to sew her brother's shirt.
Some price, you're a liar.
Mother!
Now, let us sit down and take some tea.
If I die on board of the cold weather, it'll be your fault.
I'll come to your funeral.
This ain't fair. William had 3 shirts already when he went to sea.
Rebecca! Oh, what a sad fire we've got. Draw your chair nearer, my dear. Did Rebecca not bring in the coals? Susan, did you not take care of the fire?
It really doesn't matter, Mama.
I was upstairs moving my things out for Fanny, but Rebecca wouldn't help.
It really is of no importance.
Rebecca!
Mother, my shirt!
So this is your home, Fanny. Do you remember it? You were so young when you left us that...
9 years old.
Oh, here's your father now.
William, my boy. Your ship is anchored off Spithead.
I know, Father.
You missed quite a sight to see it sail out of harbour.
This is Fanny. Come all this way.
I took Sam with me to watch it go. Never seen better in all my days. I've been to Turner's about your mess. She'll have your orders tomorrow.
Father.
She lies close to the Endymion between her and the Cleopatra.
But here is my sister, sir. Fanny.
Fanny Price. Quite grown. I expect you'll be wanting a husband soon, eh?
Fanny is aware that her father smells of strong drink. And he seems to have no time at all for his daughters, but only for his sons.
My aunt's going to spend their life.
Mother! Betsy's been playing with my hat!
Now, I am speaking with your sister, William.
And Susan was meant to mend my waistcoat.
That was not!
The smallness of the house and the thinness of the walls brings everyone so close to Fanny that, added to her tiredness from her journey, she knows not how she shall bear it.
I shall mend your waistcoat, William.
It wasn't my fault, Mother!
The lard flowed over the mantel, Mrs! Oh,
now, Rebecca, did you not bring in the coals?
I already got one pair of hands!
And William threw his hat up!
I ain't got no shirt. What about my shirt?
Fanny Price is home. But what a home. She checks herself. What right has she to be of importance to her family? She has been away so long.
Stop your confounded noise, or I shall be after you.
Fanny, fatigued, is thankful to accept the first invitation of going to bed. There is nothing to raise her spirits in the scantily furnished chamber she is to share with her sister, Susan. She lies awake. The sounds of the household and the street outside passing easily through the thin walls of the room. She thinks of her own little room at Mansfield Park and of Edmund, far away, in love with Mary Crawford.
You be careful, Sam. Now, look after your brother, William.
I will, Mother.
I'll be all right, Mother.
Take care of Fanny, Mother. She's tender, and not used to roughing it like the rest of us.
Oh, my own boy.
Goodbye, Mother.
Goodbye.
William is gone. The home where he has left Fanny is in almost every respect the reverse of what she could have wished. Here, noise, disorder, and impropriety rule. She cannot respect her parents as she had hoped.
Lovely dinner, that, my dear. Fancy a drop of brandy, eh?
Shall we not talk with Fanny tonight?
I have business in the dockyard, my dear.
I only thought...
Would you keep a man prisoner in his own house?
Mr. Price had not wanted for abilities as a young man, but he had no curiosity. He does not read books. He talks only of the dockyard, the harbour, Spithead. He swears and drinks. He is dirty and gross.
Your father always has his business. Let me help, Mother.
Mrs. Price is not unkind, but her daughters have never been much to her. William is her pride.
Bring the coal.
She neither teaches nor restrains her children. Fanny can think of nothing, nothing, nothing but Mansfield Park. The elegance, regularity, harmony and peace of Mansfield Park. By the end of the week, Fanny is tempted to apply to the two houses Dr. Johnson's celebrated judgment as to matrimony and celibacy, and say that though Mansfield Park might have some pains, Portsmouth could have no pleasures.
Fanny! Fanny! Letters!
My dearest Fanny, I have seen your cousins, dear Julia and Mrs. Rushworth. They found me at home yesterday, and we were glad to see each other again. We seemed very glad, and I really think we were. A little. On the whole, Julia was in the best looks. But Mrs. Rushworth's day of good looks will come. She will have her first party on the 28th, when she will be mistress of one of the best houses in Wimpole Street. She will certainly feel then that she has got, to use a vulgar phrase, her pennyworth for her penny.
Dearest Fanny, I'm writing to you about our friend Miss Crawford. You know the weak side of her character, Fanny, and can no doubt imagine the situation I found her in London, surrounded by her mercenary and ambitious friends. They have been leading her astray for years.
Your cousin Edmund moved extremely slowly and arrived with us late, detained perhaps by parish duties. There may have been some old woman at Thornton Lacey to be converted. I am unwilling to fancy myself neglected for a young one.
But dearest Fanny, I cannot give her up. She is the only woman in the world I could ever think of as a wife. I send you my best love, Edmund.
Is it bad news, Fan?
My cousin Edmund is in love, that's all.
That's all? In love?
With a woman he feels has been led astray.
Is she a bad person?
No. No, not bad. She's like one of Rebecca's stringy old beans in the garden.
How's that?
We're only as good as what we've been fed on over the years.
I know you don't like it here. You've been somewhere much better. Our house is like a circus.
It is a little.
Who do you think Rebecca is?
The wife of the strong man, following him around with his great weights and chains.
Shouting after him, don't sit down there, I just put me potatoes on that chair, you great big lump. What's this?
Shakespeare. We used to read it aloud in the evenings at home. don't have books here. Listen. Oh, dear Father, restoration hang thy medicine on my lips, and let this kiss repair those violent harms that my two sisters have in thy reverence made. King Lear,